Good morning. Used to be, you'd be in UU churches and there'd be like someone playing rock and roll. And you would look out there and you'd think, oh gosh, a lot of the people with gray hair and white hair probably don't like this music. They wish it was something else. And now, you know, it's been like 50 years since the Beatles. Most of us were raised on rock and roll at this point. Who knows what the future will hold? You know, was that an original, Mike? Second was an original. Could you put the lyrics in the newsletter, do you think? Would you be willing to do that? It might be fun to see them. Thanks. But what fancy fingers these guys have. Really fancy fingers. Well, thinking about those younger years, those times in our lives where we were becoming initiated into life, there's a lot of initiation and ritual and sacrifice in that children's story. You all know the Harry Potter the books and the movies about a young English wizard. And I'd be confident most people know Harry Potter at this point. Okay. Who's read all the books?
Whoa!
Seen all the movies? Pretty good, pretty good. Mostly the same hands, it looked like to me. My son probably watched the first one at least 60 times when he was younger. Watching it with him became sort of a family ritual event. I also read him the books as they came out, interspersed with others by authors like J.R.R. Tolkien and C.S. Lewis. And we could see where J.K. Rowling might have gotten some of her ideas for her own fantasy series. But don't get me wrong. Borrow though she might have, I think she tells a great story, working with some great ideas from both earlier literature and religion. You'll remember that much of the action in the first few books is driven by the efforts of an evil wizard to, in effect, resurrect himself with the help of several unsavory followers. Resurrection of the body is a big theme in Western religious traditions, so it's no wonder that authors have long pondered, well, if it can happen for good guys, couldn't it happen for bad guys too? So Sauron in The Lord of the Rings, the White Witch in the Narnia books, and now Voldemort all managed to pull it off. But it's not easy, and it's not cheap. To get that new body requires sacrifice, and in the case of the bad guys, preferably sacrifice of someone else. In the middle of Rowling's series, Lord Voldemort's servant, Wormtail, has Harry Potter trapped by night right over the grave of Voldemort's father there in this creepy cemetery. A cauldron stands simmering over a magical fire, and Wormtail, the servant, puts his master's grotesque embryonic form inside. And now he adds, "Bone of the father, unknowingly given, you will renew your son." The surface of the grave at Harry's feet cracked. Horrified, Harry watched as a fine trickle of dust rose in the air. In the movie, it was a bone, an actual bone. It fell softly into the cauldron. And now Wormtail pulled a long, thin, shining, silver dagger from inside his cloak. "Flesh of the servant, willingly given, you will revive your master." Cuts off his own hand. Plop! Into the cauldron. What's next? Blood of the enemy forcibly taken, you will resurrect your foe. And of course, that's a bit of Harry's blood, the last ingredient in the brew. And then through the mist in front of him, he saw with an icy surge of terror the dark outline of a man, tall and skeletally thin, rising slowly from inside the cauldron. Lord Voldemort had risen again. And this must have been so much fun for Ralph Fiennes. And it's Voldemort. He'd had so many movies after The English Patient, where the main thing seems to be an opportunity for a lovely actress to make out with Ralph Fiennes. This was his great chance to be a bad guy, and he relishes it. Okay, that's a big aside. Bone, flesh, blood, and fire. And once again, that power of sacrifice is confirmed, but all for the worse this time. How could it be for the better? Well, let's turn to that after we return to the sunshine and sing "Morning So Fair to See." And remember, once again, let's not sing this like a Protestant droning hymn. This is a real elemental song about the morning and the light. Let's give it that light. Thank you. I invite you to take that hymn sometime, make a photocopy of it or something, and go out and sing that by the Columbia River one morning in the winter. Get the feel for it out there, right in the elements. That's my water. Well, I was elected the co-advisor of the Pacific Central District Liberal Religious Youth Organization, better known as LRY, in April of 1979. The Pacific Central District is the next Unitarian district south of here. And that was a real honor. An extraordinary adult leader had recently preceded me, and he had set the bar really high. The Bay Area's good public transportation had helped him to build a regional UU youth group, 250 kids, who met every Tuesday night with no need for parents to drive them. Hard to reproduce that in every setting. No one wanted him to leave California, but he had finished seminary and accepted a call to be the minister someplace no one had ever heard of, called Community Unitarian Universalist Church, in some city called Kennewick, up in Washington State. There were cities in Washington besides Seattle? Who knew? Harold Rosen was a legend, and a legend is hard to follow. Fortunately, in May, it was time for a new governing board of mostly teenagers, plus a few adult advisors, to take over from the old one. Harold had instituted something that would help us, the practice of having a new old board retreat. And some kind members of the Marin Church had let us use their cabin in rural Mendocino County for that purpose. It was a great place for this transfer of institutional power. It was quiet and secluded, but without being too far or too hard to reach. Well, little did we suspect that another kind of power would also make itself known before the weekend was over. And this is how it happened. Early on the first morning, after a long meeting the night before and little sleep given the excitement of so many young bodies under one roof, several of us had gone down to a dock on the river that the cabin overlooked. It was a slow river, not these crazy, one of these crazy roller coasters you've got in the West, but it was slower, like the one I'd known in Illinois. And look there, a tail fin broke the water. I thought probably a large carp. I was seized by my ancient fishing fever, and I moaned aloud about how I'd love to catch that fish. Someone had seen an old fishing pole up at the cabin and raced up to get it. It was already rigged with a hook and some weights, just right for this slow May current. Well, we soon found a worm under a rock. Was that the worm? Protesting? It had a little bell? We found a worm under a rock, and I made the first cast. Few of the kids had ever fished before, and they were happy to let me do it. Within a few minutes, I felt the bite. Set the hook, and I reeled in a silvery blue channel catfish, about a pound, the perfect size for pan frying, just like the fish on the cover of your order of service. My spirits soared, but then they sank right away, since now I had a problem. The fish was deeply hooked. I managed to get the hook free without too much damage, but the injury seemed so pointless. This wasn't a fishing trip. We had a busy day of meetings planned and another day after that to follow. I said that one fish was enough for me and that we had better put the pole away. Well, there's me, and then there's we. I had infected everybody with fishing fever. Few of them had ever fished before, but now almost everybody, roughly equal numbers of young men and young suburban men and young suburban women, all wanted to try. I explained how I felt about injuring a creature for no purpose. And they shared those same feelings. Someone said we could eat them. And I said, Sure we could. And then I explained that cleaning a catfish poses some special challenges compared to some other fish. It can get pretty gruesome. That's okay, they said. We want to learn. Well, the fishing sort of went on and off all day between important meetings, or for a few of the young men, instead of the important meetings. My fault, in large part. But this other kind of meeting with creatures from a non-human world was something very new for these old organizational hands. They were much more experienced at that kind of work than I was. But for my part, I was an old fisherman, a very new advisor, but an old fisherman. We found a big bucket by the cabin. It began to fill with catfish. I advised the kids to keep changing the water. The meetings went on and on. By dark, there were close to 20 catfish in the bucket, all roughly the same size, that perfect size to fry up, one per plate or two for big eaters. A few were floating, but most were alive and vigorous. We, on the other hand, not so vigorous. We were all getting pretty tired from all the meetings and all the excitement, and suddenly no one felt much like cleaning fish, including yours truly. Someone said, would they be okay in the bucket till morning? No, they'd be spoiled. We have a responsibility to finish what we started. Has anyone ever cleaned any kind of fish, cut up a chicken, anything like that? Well, only a few of the young people were vegetarians, but none had ever done any of these things. They were in for something new. How are we going to kill the ones that are still alive? I told them that the way I learned to do it in Illinois, they'll die in the process, or we can hit them on the head first. Now I learned that none of them had ever killed a living thing larger than an insect. Nothing with red blood, except for squashing a mosquito after being bitten. So the events I'm about to describe were much more charged for these urban and suburban young people than they would have been for kids raised backcountry or on a farm. Communities are like snowflakes. No two are alike. And this community was poised for an experience from wholly outside their world. The way I learned for a catfish or a cat, some of you who are squeamish might want to get your hands sort of ready. Catfish or a cat, as we call them back in Illinois, was to start by nailing the head to a board. Okay, I know people from Illinois are horrible. They really are. Anybody from Illinois? Yeah, we're a pretty nasty bunch. But anyway, I'm glad in a way that although we found a board and some pliers and a ball peen hammer, we couldn't find any nails. So I gave the first fish a solid bop and slit the skin around the neck and began to pull back the skin down to the tail. The animal shook. I lost my grip. I found it again. Several of my young companions also shook. So did I, a little bit. Something was in the air. If you're shaking now, you definitely may want to cover your ears for what's to follow. The similarity of a catfish to a real cat, once its skin is off, or to a human being, for that matter, was not lost on any of us. I cut the head from the body, eviscerated the torso, sliced away the remaining fins, rinsed the fillet, and I showed it around before wrapping it in plastic. I mentioned that the head could live for hours, or at least the gills would move and the mouth might open and close. I cautioned everyone to avoid being pricked by the sharp dorsal and pectoral spines as they clean their own fish. So you ready? Okay, that's the nasty part. That's anyone who had their ears, you can uncover them now. No one who was watching was sure that they could repeat what I'd just done. Some were probably surprised that a hippie with a ponytail to the middle of his back and a mid-chest beard could do such things so well, even though the hippie knew that he could do much better. I cleaned one more, much more quickly and confidently. My touch was coming back. And now the first kid stepped up to try, young woman as I remember. I watched carefully and offered suggestions, but she hardly needed any. I went inside, telling the group to just yell for me if they needed help. No one needed any help. There was plenty of yelling, but not for my help. All help came from within the group. They were excited, laughing, screaming now and then, but everybody was completely into it. Everyone cleaned a fish, and some did more than one. There's more than one way to skin a cat, that's for sure. But in the end, they all did fine. A large plastic bag filled with almost perfect fillets. But the air, like the air in that children's story, was filled with something else. It was sparky. We put the bag in the freezer, though the fridge would have been enough since we planned to eat the fish for the next day's supper. All day long, our meetings had been charged with that kind of energy. Our evening meetings were even more so. We planned for conferences later in the year, overnights. We were full of new ideas. Let's try this. Maybe we can do that. Who knows what we can do? Everything seemed tangibly more intense. Everybody was noticeably more confident. The old board that they were passing the torch into good hands, and the new board that they could keep that torch blazing brilliantly. I don't know how much anyone slept, though I'm confident that their dreams were pretty vivid. But during a break from our morning meetings, next day we got out the roll of fillets so that it could thaw by evening. It was heavy, and it had settled into sort of a football shape. So naturally, someone tossed it. What fun! It was like all the energy of the conference condensed into a single package, a medicine ball with sacred power. Back and forth it flew with cries of delight until, with a scream of horror, it flew straight at a young man who'd been distracted. Nailed him right in the forehead. Oddly enough, his name was Gil. Well, now the fish knocked the breath out of him. He fell. Everything stopped. We all held our breath as the air went thick like water. One teenager had died on an LRY campout some years ago when Harold was with them. And Harold knew what to do. Things had gotten out of hand. Things have been safe ever since, but such things can happen at youth outings, even with smart kids like this. Oh, God. God. Is he okay? I'm happy to say that he was. He had a silvery blue catfish-colored bruise, but he was fine. It could just as well have gone the other way, as this group knew too well. Gil hadn't died. The fish were fried. And then they were inside of us. It was the first animal food that any of these young folks had ever taken from capture to cleaning to cooking themselves. So we shared a meal of a very special kind. The fish did more than to nourish our individual bodies, some of which were still growing very fast. They had also helped to bring a new body into being. A new body, a new community. This was a new old board retreat, remember. One of Harold Rosen's great ideas. We'd come together to create a new body of leaders. A new body. That's what we had now, in part thanks to what can only be called a sacrifice, initiation. We had created a new body as much as we had renewed an old one. Put the life back in. Bone, flesh, blood, and fire. Here were all of the same elements that the evil Lord Voldemort had used to resurrect himself into a new body from a remnant of the old. That was all for the worst. As much as I enjoy the Harry Potter story, I have to tell you I've never understood why Voldemort wants to be resurrected. Why return? He wants power over the world, but for what purpose? He doesn't seem to want to be responsible for it. That may be why he seems to be trying to destroy as much of it as possible. He doesn't seem to love the world of witches and wizards any more than he loves the rest of us. Of course, Voldemort is a creature of books and movies and lives in a virtual world. There was nothing virtual about that retreat for young folks and adults. We were all transformed by our sacrifice, and it was all for the better. I count myself so fortunate to have had a chance to work with such a tightly committed group of people. What happened with the fish was not something we'd planned for. I wonder whether we could have planned to do it again. What if we'd been able to schedule the retreat at the same place, the same time of year? Even if the same fishing pole had been there, the fish might not have been. You can't always be sure of what you'll find in a river that keeps on moving and changing. Bone, flesh, blood, and fire, these are powerful realities as much as they are powerful symbols. They're inherently risky elements to deal with, as we all discovered when poor Gil took the impact of that fish flesh football right against his skull. We were lucky that all he got was a bruise. We were just as lucky that no one cut themselves while cutting into and cutting through the fish. A finger could have gotten in the way, or the palm of someone's hand. With all my experience at such tasks, I still get injured now and then by a tooth, the knife, sharp end of a bone. But just as there's more than one way to skin a cat, there are more ways to pull a group together than skinning catfish. I'm sure that you can think of a few. We might be able to accomplish much the same by making zucchini bread or pumpkin pie, especially if we all went out together to harvest the zucchini or the pumpkins, or grown them ourselves. Still, there would be all the risk of knives and ovens and the kind of burns you can get from things that are hot and sticky. We need to be careful, but we can't eliminate all risks. The elements of sacrifice, if they are to be powerful, cannot simply be virtual. They really do need to be real. That's the only way that they can bring new bodies into being or renew life in the old. Can we plan for that? Can we schedule that? I'm not sure. But I am sure that we can try. We get a lot of that energy from our alternative gifts fair, with a strong element of sacrifice. Right? We heat our building, we turn on our lights, we run this, and then other people get the benefit. A lot of sacrifice. We'll get a lot more of this kind of energy as we start to move on building our new church addition, too. I'm so grateful that I once had the opportunity to be part of such an event. I'm not sure if I ever became a legend like that old youth advisor, your old minister. Anybody remember Harold? Does anybody date here from Harold Rosen's time? Henry. And what's your name?
Patty.
Patty. Do you remember Harold Rosen? All right. Yeah, that's really some history, some connection. Well, I don't know if I ever became a legend like him, but that retreat was a legendary one. I still get messages from people who were there. And that's where its virtual reality is as important as its very physical past of bone and flesh and blood and fire. As a story, it can be passed around and shared for years to come. Everyone can get an equal portion to digest as best they can, to make it part of yourself and part of your community. So that's my contribution to today's Super Sunday meal. I had no idea then, when these things were happening there in California, that they would connect to and have so much to do with this community here. Of all the places, with this community, right here, right now, Who even knew back then that there were cities in Washington besides Seattle? Well, I'm glad to have discovered that there are. Amen.